I'm Lina Akhmoudou. Welcome to Health Chat. It is one of the top 10 global public health threats facing humanity, according to the World Health Organization. That's antimicrobial resistance, or AMR. The WHO says at least 700,000 people worldwide die because of drug-resistant infections every year. By 2050, that number is expected to rise to 10 million. Experts say antibiotics are becoming increasingly ineffective as drug resistance spreads globally. On today's program, we will discuss antimicrobial resistance, or AMR. My first guest is Kate Dimmerman, Global Health Policy Advisor in the New York office of the UN Foundation. She discusses AMR and what is being done by the global community to address it. Take a listen.
Kate Dimmerman, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you very much for having me, Lenore. It's a pleasure to be joining you.
Pleasure to have you. Listen, we hear a lot about antimicrobial resistance, drug resistance, as some like to call it, or AMR. Can you tell us what is AMR?
As you know, the discovery of antibiotics was one of the greatest achievements of the 20th century. And with antibiotics, doctors were suddenly able to cure some of the most basic infections and save countless lives in the process. But a new antibiotic hasn't been developed in over 30 years. And during that time, the antibiotics that we have grown, have aged. But more importantly, the microbes that they're intended to destroy, microbes meaning bacteria, viruses, fungi, and other parasites, have evolved. And they've stopped responding to the antibiotics that most doctors have on hand to treat these once very simple sources of sickness, like infections, for example. So what has happened is, as these superbugs, as we now call them, continue to defy treatment by conventional antibiotics, we're finding ourselves in a situation where more and more patients are dying from these once treatable conditions. And the challenge we have now is to convince everyone to work together to invest in the search for new antibiotics. And just to put the problem into perspective, it's estimated that approximately 700,000 people around the world currently die from drug-resistant infections, diseases. So it is a mounting, a looming challenge, particularly as we look at it through the perspective of COVID. We're seeing that drug-resistant infections, conditions are on the uptick.
Can you give us a sense of how this problem translates when we look at the prevalence in rich countries, as we call them, versus low and middle-income countries?
It is a challenge everywhere because the microbes that we're fighting exist all around us, in people, animals, in the environment, in food, and they can pass from person to person, from person to animal, etc. And of course, the spread of drug-resistant microbes is even more challenging when you have conditions of poor sanitation, weak health systems, inadequate supply chains for drugs, limited investment in drug manufacturing and capacity. And so unfortunately, we do see that a lot of those factors tend to disproportionately affect Africa, South Asia, countries' weak health systems.
What needs to be done from the pharmaceutical side? You talked about the need for more investment, but some of those resistance that we are seeing, are they specific to some condition where pharmaceuticals need to step up and create and renew more new drugs and new antibiotics? Or or is it just a problem that across the board is seen in?
It is a problem across the board, but pharmaceuticals are obviously well placed to take a lead role in pioneering a path towards combating AMR. However, the challenge is for the pharmaceuticals, of course, is finding the capital to invest in research and development. Because as we've seen even recently in the search for a COVID vaccine, the process of developing an antibiotic or any drug for that matter is a lengthy and arduous and very expensive one. And part of the solution to combating AMR is urging doctors and those who require the antibiotics to really rationalize their use. So don't overprescribe them. If you're prescribed a course, finish it to completion, et cetera, et cetera. We've all heard about the safe treatment of antibiotics. But what that means from a company's point of view is that you're being asked to invest in and produce something that doesn't necessarily have a high resale value, or something that's not necessarily even intended to be flying off the shelves, so to speak. So it's a challenge to incentivize the pharmaceuticals to start investing in the research and the development of new antibiotics. And that's something that really has to be done with governments in partnership with the private sector, as well as, of course, medical professions and many other experts from across the industries of food, agriculture, zoonics.
Okay. And one of the things that I've noticed personally when I go home, for example, back to Africa, is the easy access to some antibiotics. And there is also this issue of counterfeit products that is available on black markets and things like that. So is there a difference when it comes to the reasons of AMR in a country like the United States or in the Western world versus in Africa, for example, where people have maybe easier access to antibiotics?
I think the underlying causes are the same, but as you mentioned, the unregulated access to antibiotics through the private or the black market certainly does increase reliance on antibiotics, possibly even in cases where they aren't necessarily required. And that overusage, in turn, encourages resistance amongst the very microbes that the drug is intended to combat. And that's where we start to run into all sorts of problems, the very problems we're discussing now. So again, I think part of the solution goes back to having strong health systems with clear and enforced regulatory systems that work hand in hand with pharmaceuticals, with industry, with agriculture, with zoonics. And what we call this approach, this holistic approach, is the One Health approach. And it is an approach that's endorsed and advocated for by the UN, working together with the World Health Organization, with food and agriculture, amongst others, to really make sure that all of the relevant sectors are brought together. And of course, the UN Foundation also plays a role in this by convening private sector entities that have direct and indirect interests in AMR and working with them to find ways to stimulate and catalyze action amongst the private sector to really get ahead of the curve with AMR.
What is the impact of AMR on economies in general? And when we look at the Sustainable Development Goals, we talk about development, how much is AMR an issue that needs to be tackled when we look at the big picture of development.
Sure, no, absolutely. It's estimated, just in terms of the human cost, it's estimated that by 2050, if AMR continues unchecked, that the world will lose up to 10 million people. And that's more than the number of people who would die from cancer, for instance. But if the human toll isn't enough, the economic toll is equally severe. It's estimated that, again, if left unchecked, AMR will cost the global economy approximately $100 trillion in total by 2050.
So your final thought before we wrap?
And I think it's underscoring the appeal for a One Health approach, sensitizing people to the importance of AMR and the danger that it does pose, and urging people to be very careful with their antibiotics and how they use them.
Kate Dimmerman, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure.
That was Kate Dimmerman with the UN Foundation. It is time for a short break. We will have more on antimicrobial resistance when we return. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Join Issues in the News moderator Dan Raviv and a panel of experts as they analyze the top stories of the week, including the biggest vaccination campaign in American history, beginning with healthcare workers getting COVID-19 shots around the nation. Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
VOA's Our Voices television program is about more than just sitting and talking about women's issues. It's about listening to them and bringing their opinions to the table and making sure that their voices are heard. Because our lived experiences, our stories, and our voices will help shape the next generation.
Check your local TV listings and join the conversation each week with Our Voices on VOA.
Welcome back to Health Chat. On the program today, we take a look at antimicrobial resistance, or AMR. Now, Dr. Carsten Hemrich is Vice President for Health and Medical Solutions with Essity, a global hygiene and health company. I asked him to tell us more about AMR.
If we look at antimicrobial resistance, let's start with the antibiotics. They have become a significant part of our lives. Whether you are immune compromised, whether you have an organ transplant, or whether you undergo surgery like a prostate biopsy or getting a joint implant or a cesarean section, all of those situations and procedures, they involve antibiotics. And assuming now that antibiotics don't work anymore, like in antimicrobial resistance, gives you a picture of the dimension of what will all not be possible anymore. And when you ask me what's the threat of antimicrobial resistance, it is not less than the danger of falling back to the pre-antibiotic era, where people may have died from small infections. And maybe to put the magnitude in numbers, currently we have 50,000 deaths per year in Europe and the US, and worldwide probably around 700,000. And this is predicted to reach the number of 10 million deaths by the year of 2050. So quite a magnitude, and that shows why antimicrobial resistance is such a problem of our days.
So would you walk us through some of the causes, why we see AMR, and to what extent are they different, whether it's in a developing country versus an industrialized country?
So, well, let's look at what are the different ways of how you can develop antimicrobial resistance. In order to answer this, we need to look at where antibiotics are being used. And basically, you've got the agricultural component and you've got medicine where you use it to fight infections. So one way of developing antimicrobial resistance is by consuming food or water that has been pre-treated or been in contact with antibiotics or contains bacteria or bacterial remnants that then transmit the disease. Another way is to treat yourself with antibiotics, to treat an infection, and then having bacteria remain in your body that develop resistance. And finally, you can acquire or get an infection based on bacteria that are already resistant. So those are different ways of how to develop antimicrobial resistance. You asked about the difference between industrial and developing countries. The problem is, and similar actually in both cases a bit, is the free availability of antibiotics. And the consequence of having antibiotics without prescription is basically an overuse of them. So the small infection is treated with antibiotics. Sometimes even viral infections are treated with antibiotics where they do not work at all. And then you have the phenomenon of overuse and underdose, so to not used for a sufficiently long period of time. And this is something which already Alexander Fleming, the inventor of penicillin, predicted. He said that once penicillin will be widely available, can be bought in every shop without prescription, there's a danger that it will be overused and due to not taking long enough, underdosed, and that would drive the development of resistance.
So how do we really raise the awareness, the consciousness, so that people understand the scope of this problem?
So I think what's important is that our messaging connects with our everyday life. And what feels most powerful to me is to emphasize how essential antibiotics and their effectiveness are for all of us in our everyday life. As stated a bit earlier, the simple surgery, the biopsy in the hospital, the cesarean section, all of those things. An immunocompromised person that is dependent on antibiotics. If you just take the magnitude of what established place antibiotics have, and if you then imagine that they don't work at all anymore, people realize that the standard life as we are living it, including the walk in the park where you can scratch yourself, the bicycle riding where you can actually hurt yourself, all of these procedures become life-threatening because the infection that you might get from this could get you killed. And I think transferring this rather theoretical term of antimicrobial resistance to what it means to our everyday life is helpful to further drive the creation of awareness.
So what can citizens do to help in this struggle?
So what measurements can we do? Can we take? Definitely we can reduce the creation of resistance by more restrictive use of antibiotics. This involves less over-the-counter availability in the pharmacy as well as more careful and more conscious prescription in medicine. What we can also do is reduce or ideally avoid the use of antibiotics in agriculture. As I said, this is in the cycle, in the food cycle. This is something where antibiotics also then get transmitted in their effect of resistance. And finally, avoid the spread of infection with resistant bacteria through preventive hygiene measurements. So there are a lot of things that we can do that we actually have in our hands to influence the growth or not growth of antimicrobial resistance.
In doing so, what sorts of collaboration are we looking at, whether it's a government's role and private institutions and the global community, what sorts of collaboration?
Well, the government can play a significant role here in setting the frame for restricted and justified utilization of antibiotics. Avoid it where possible and apply it properly when needed should be the principle. And when it comes to agricultural legislation, prescription versus over-the-counter use, for all those cases, the government, of course, has a crucial role in setting the right ground for all of us and how we actually use it. With a short time span until resistance kicks in, the development of antibiotics is not such a viable model for the pharmaceutical companies anymore. And therefore, governmental steering of funding may also help But that only works if we introduce the measurements of more restricted use of antibiotics in parallel. That also needs to be implemented. And if we take the setup of the hospital, it's crucial that the personnel and the management take this forward. They carry a very important role here, working on infection prevention primarily, driving a conscious use of antibiotics, and taking the right products to the right bacteria. And finally, of course, working with innovative products that avoid or reduce the use of antibiotics.
And Dr. Carson, talk to us about ACT, what your organization does, and in terms of AMR, how do you contribute to the global fight?
So, ACT is a hygiene and health company, and as such, we are driving educational aspects, preventive measurements, and product innovations to fight antimicrobial resistance. If you take the educational side, we are just celebrating Hand Washing Day, how to properly clean your hands. And other examples in this space are that we provide virtual reality training to healthcare professionals so that they can check how their actions are working according to hygiene measurements and hygiene principles. We then have the preventive measurements with our cleaning procedures, and we have product innovations that fight that are helpful in wound infections. And maybe to magnify on the last bit a bit, we do have wounds as one incidence where antibiotics are sometimes needed, but can very often also be avoided. If a wound is infected, you can take innovative products, like one product that we have developed where you have a dressing that you put on the wound, and the dressing does not release any antibiotics or any antimicrobial agents, but just works by physical force, interacts with the bacteria in the wound. The bacteria are inactivated, they bind to the dressing, and with every dressing change, you then remove the bacteria from the wound. So you are preventing the growth. You are preventing the development of antimicrobial resistance by not putting any antibiotics into the wound. A second product that I could also mention in this context is plaster on a spool, where we have taken the spool, the plastic ring, and we have equipped it with antimicrobial properties so that when the spool with the plaster on it is passed through different hands or is used by healthcare professionals at the patient side, that germs cannot grow on the surface, they are eliminated, so that, again, there's no spread of infections encouraged. So these are just a few examples, but overall we try from various angles to drive awareness here, preventive and product innovation measurements to actually act on fighting antimicrobial resistance.
Okay. And before we wrap, do you have any final thoughts in terms of how we move forward with addressing this issue?
Well, I think there is an impetus for collective action here indeed. I mean, the good news is that there are so many ends where we as a society can act and can change the way how we act about antibiotics, whether it's our agriculture, whether it's our habits, how we get antibiotics from the pharmacy, how we apply self-medication, how long we take them, how we follow the doctor's orders on the length of treatment. We all must act here. It lays indeed in our hands to drive towards consequences that are preventing the growth of antimicrobial resistance and fight it effectively.
Dr. Carsten Hemrick, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks a lot for having me. It has been a pleasure.
That was Dr. Carsten Hemrick, Vice President for Health and Medical Solutions with ACT. We'll be right back. This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization And U.S. Centers for Disease Control say coughing and sneezing can spread COVID-19. Physical distancing, staying at least 1 meter away from people outside your family, can protect everyone. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa. You are listening to Health Chat on Voice of America. We turn now to the coronavirus pandemic. Now to Nigeria, where authorities are worried that COVID-19 may spike again as millions ignore safety measures such as wearing face masks and social distancing. Timothy Obizu reports from Abuja.
45-year-old Nigerian butcher Martin Olaya strongly strikes the blades of his cutting knives against the other in order to attract the attention of customers. It's been months since the coronavirus pandemic lockdown was lifted, and this Otaku market in Abuja is again operating at full capacity. But among many concerns of business owners like Olaya, the coronavirus pandemic is the least of them. Market is really bad. We don't know what the coronavirus is. We haven't seen it. There's nothing that concerns Nigeria with that. God will not allow it. Many traders like Olaya continue to doubt the coronavirus ever existed and therefore are flouting safety rules. Abuja resident Dorothy Wozo, who's shopping for groceries, is one of very few people wearing a face mask. She says she's not happy that others are not taking responsibility.
Look around you. You can count the number of people wearing face masks. People are touching meat. People are touching foodstuff. They don't sanitize their hands.
Nigeria has recorded more than 67,400 cases of the coronavirus since its first one in February. The Nigeria Center for Disease Control says the country reached its peak infections between July and August and then recorded a downward trend. But officials say coronavirus infections began rising again in November as many countries began battling a second wave of the infection. Chinwe Achu, a director of the NCDC, worries that citizens, especially younger people, have stopped being vigilant.
Above 21 years and less than 50 years are more likely not to adhere to COVID-19 prevention protocols because they are usually the ones that don't have the severe symptoms. But these are the people that are likely to have the disease and transmit it to the vulnerable elderly groups or people with comorbidities who could die from it.
COVID-19 is the disease caused by the coronavirus. Experts attribute the new rise in cases to the NSARS protests last month, which saw thousands of young Nigerians march against police brutality. The use and sales of personal protective equipment have also dropped significantly. Nigerian authorities are trying to avoid imposing strict lockdowns by urging citizens to adhere to COVID-19 guidelines. President Muhammadu Buhari has warned the country's already fragile economy may not withstand another lockdown. Economics lecturer Anas Ibrahim agrees with the president.
About 60 to 65% of the sectors that we have in Nigeria now, they actually decline. They are not performing. They are not actually, you know, lucrative to actually to boost the economy in order to create more job opportunities, a lot of revenue to the government.
Last week, Nigeria's Bureau of Statistics announced the country had plunged into a recession after its economy contracted by 3.6% due to coronavirus disruptions. Authorities say they are hopeful that the economy will begin to recover early next year, but that citizens must act responsibly. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja.
That's it for this edition of Health Chat. We thank our guests, Kate Dammerman, Global Health Policy Advisor with the UN Foundation, and Dr. Carsten Hemrick, Vice President for Health and Medical Solutions with ACT. For the latest news and coverage on the coronavirus, visit voanews.com. Check us out at facebook.com/VOA Health Chat and let's keep the conversation going. Thank you all for joining us and special thanks to all our affiliate stations throughout Africa for carrying Health Chat. I'm your host, Lenore Mudo in Washington with producer Dan Brown. Until next time, take care, stay safe, and wash your hands more frequently and strive to make every day a healthy day.